This is Deanna Spingola. It is Friday, August 10th, 2012, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is Bare Bones Broadcasting. My guest today is Pastor Eli James. His websites are anglo-saxonisrael.com and killthebank.com. .net. And I see that your website, your initial one, anglo-saxonisrael.com, is not functioning yet. So
yeah, it's still down, right? Yeah. Yeah, the ADL put pressure on PowWeb, which was my web host, to take my website down because it reveals too much information, factual information about the Jewish history. And, you know, that's pretty much what we're going to be talking about today. What is true Jewish history versus the, oh, how should I put it, the masquerade that world Jewry has been operating under for the last 2,000 years. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Now, would you call it a mask?
Absolutely. In fact, I was going to quote, now at some point in the show today, I'll quote an excellent booklet by William Norman Saxon entitled The Mask of Edom. Okay.
Oh.
Edom. E-D-O-M.
Okay. And also The Great Jewish Mask.
Yes.
By other than, what is his name, Lise?
Arnold Lise.
Mm-hmm.
Arnold Lise. And Arnold Lise is actually one of my heroes because he endeavored to expose the Jewish hoax. And of course, the title of his article here that we'll be discussing tonight is The Great Jewish Mask.
Right.
And so William Norman Saxon had a similar idea, you know, when he entitled his booklet The Mask of Edom. Okay. And it's going to be an interesting contrast between what I would call, I really shouldn't even call it neo-Nazi people in Britain before and during World War II. They weren't neo-Nazis by any stretch of the imagination. However, they were being accused of being neo-Nazis. The same thing happened here in America under the Roosevelt administration. American citizens who were opposed to getting America into World War II were simply accused of being neo-Nazis or being sympathetic to the Nazi regime because they many of them saw, such as Charles H. Lindbergh Jr., saw that there was Jewish money and Jewish backing to the invasion of Germany, okay?
Right.
And of course,
there were people here in this country who justifiably supported the Hitler regime because they saw something good about it, including, Ford. And so...
Yeah. Well, Henry Ford did business. In fact, there's actually a lot of Jewish businessmen that supported the Nazi regime before World War II. And there's all kinds of the Bush family and related families supported the Hitler regime.
Well, that is basically stuff from a Jewish book that we have to really tread lightly here because the Bush family, that's kind of propaganda that the Bush family supported them.
Yeah. Well, all I'm saying is that most people before World War II we're not anticipating a world war. Okay. So all of this is just business as usual. Okay. One of the interesting things about World War II was that, for example, the DuPont family, which owned IG Farben in Germany, the Allies never bombed any of the IG Farben factories. And there was a great scandal among American soldiers who said, hey, how come we're not bombing this factory, right? Well, it was because it was owned by the DuPont family, right? So what you have is international corporations and international finance that actually staged these wars, okay? And I think that the people, the American anti-war movement, just before and to some extent during World War II, understood that international finance, headed by the Jews, was the power behind World War II.
Oh,
Okay.
absolutely.
Yeah, they understood that. And a lot of Americans, in fact, very, very few people, even in Britain and even in Germany, they don't understand that the reason why Hitler invaded Poland was because there was a mass genocide of German people inside of Poland, that the part of Poland that was annexed actually belonged to Germany before World War I, and it was given to Poland at the Versailles Treaty. So in other words, Germany was balkanized by the Versailles Treaty, and a great mass of Germans was instantly transformed into Polish citizens thanks to the Versailles Treaty. And the Polish government mistreated these Germans very badly, and there was a Jewish conspiracy to take out these German citizens, and there was a massive slaughter.
Right. That was called the Bromberg Massacre.
Right, over 30,000 Germans were massacred in Poland, and that's the reason why Hitler invaded Poland.
Yeah. Well,
That's
there.
never reported.
Yes, and this had been going on for 20 years. It had been going on basically since the end of World War One.
Yes, yeah. And actually, it's good that we talk about World War I and the Versailles Treaty and how that set up World War II, because the fact is, the Versailles Treaty after World War I basically blamed Germany, even though Germany was the last nation to get involved in World War I. Nevertheless, the Versailles Treaty, which was really headed by the Rothschilds and international Jewish bankers, who were behind all the treaty negotiations and the eventual settlement, right? They basically blamed Germany for all of World War I, okay?
Right.
And they were not guilty of starting the war, okay? The war was actually started by Jewish Freemasons who assassinated the Archduke, right?
Right.
And then they took advantage of World War I to instigate the Bolshevik Revolution, assassinated the Tsar and his family, and then took over Christian Russia and began a systematic campaign of exterminating white Christian Russia.
Yes.
Okay? Millions upon millions of white Christians were butchered by the Jewish Bolsheviks, beginning with Stalin and then the rest of them.
Right.
Yeah, of course, and this is true history, not the 6 million stuff that the Jews make movies about. Right.
Right.
And so what happened in Germany right after World War I was because the Weimar Republic was actually run by Jews under the Versailles Treaty, they simply bankrupted Germany. Okay. Germany was in horrible economic condition, and here is the real big secret of why world Jewry had to make war against Germany. It's because Hitler, even during the midst of a global depression, a depression which America did not come out of until the beginning of World War II, Hitler got Germany back on its feet. How did he do it? Well, he got rid of all the Jewish bankers, right?
Right.
He got rid of all the Jewish bankers, and he instituted a social credit program tailored on Lincoln's greenbacks, which Lincoln used to finance
Well,
the war.
actually, this Lincoln thing, those greenbacks were really designed to benefit the bankers because they had a clause in them that and that's something that we probably ought to talk about some other time. But it actually benefited the bankers. So
Well,
what
yeah,
Hit
ultimately, yeah.
yeah,
But
what Hitler did is totally different because he didn't have a gold reserve. There was no gold in Germany. His was totally based on the production of the German people and their faith and everything else.
Right, yeah, and he gave newlywed couples, I think it was 25,000 marks for every child up to four children, right? So, in other words, he encouraged the German people to have children, right? And he basically, but in principle, he did the same thing that Lincoln did to finance the Civil War. He simply issued government money, okay? He issued government money instead of Jewish banker money. And that was working so well, within months, the German economy was completely turned around. Starving people, people who had lost their homes, people who had lost everything, were suddenly prosperous, working. Germany was put back to work under Adolf Hitler's program.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Then the Jews, because of this success, declared war in 1933. Declared economic war against Germany. Again, this is another aspect of history that is totally whitewashed. It's the put into the memory hole, as George Orwell called it, so that people, cannot understand what was really happening in Germany. What Hitler did was he got rid of the Jewish bankers, revived the German economy, put everybody back to work, and the Jews hated him for this. Because he expelled all the Jewish bankers from the country, which we should do.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Going back to this, I always hate to compare Hitler and what he did to Lincoln because there was the exception clause phrase on each and every single note on Lincoln's greenbacks, and it says good for all debts, both public and private, except duty on imports and interest on government debts. This act devalued the greenback to about 30 cents on the dollar, and one of the factors that led to the passage of the National Banking Act, and this bill benefited only one class of people, and that was the Rothschilds. And the whole thing with the Civil War actually socialized the entire country, changed the structure of the government, and was very detrimental. I mean, it was the socialist revolution of America, and it was very similar to that took place in Russia. So
Well, yeah, I have a different take on Lincoln's relationship to the bankers. It's conceivable to me, and I think you're right, that the exclusion clause was a defect in the greenbacks. However, once Lincoln was assassinated, the bankers did everything they possibly could to get the greenbacks out of circulation and get their banker money back into circulation. Okay.
Well, yeah, they had, but they also had 80% of the country's gold, which created inequity against the greenback through the addition of the exception clause on each note, which made a market for their gold. So
Well, yeah.
importers had to visit Wall Street to buy gold to pay their duties. So since Rothschild had a monopoly, they set the price. And if they had not devalued and restricted the greenbacks, if they had not retained their full legal tender, gold would have been unnecessary to pay import duties. So basically, everybody had to take that money to Wall Street, and it was an awful thing.
Yeah, ultimately, but during the Civil War, the greenbacks paid the wages of the soldiers. It paid for the supplies that were provided by all the various suppliers in the North. Okay, and so this was done completely separately from any Jewish involvement, and the Jews had no control over this. Okay, but the
Well,
redeemability of the paper note, yes, you're correct. It had to be taken back to the bankers in New York, but during the Civil War, the greenbacks actually did finance the Civil War without any Jewish profit being made.
but it was 30 cents on the dollar because of the devaluation, which really destroyed the economy. It certainly
Well,
It was a big mess, but
right.
let's stick
Yeah,
with
the Civil War is a big mess too, right?
yes, let's
Okay.
stick with the German situation.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So we just brought up this economic situation to set up what was going on in World War II, and the fact is that many, many patriots in America, in Britain, in Germany, in Europe, and in the white Christian nations those who understood economics and how the international Jew benefited from war were, you know, really on top of this situation, wondering, you know, well, what are the Jews after in World War II? Okay, and in hindsight, very, very few people could anticipate this, you know, living through World War II. But in hindsight, it's really obvious to us that the Jewish aim of World War II was to establish communism in all of Eastern Europe. Okay? Because we have Stalin, who was a full-blooded Jew. We have Churchill, whose mother was Jewish, an American Jewess, who makes him a full-blooded Jew because Judaism teaches, contrary to biblical law, that the descent goes through the mother, right?
Right. That is still up in the air. I've read some documents that say that she was, mm-hmm. and if you know
I'm
what
remember her name,
I can't remember either. But his father, Randolph Churchill, was very, very good friends with the Rothschilds, with Nathan Rothschild. And Nathan Rothschild lent Randolph Churchill a bunch of money, which he never paid back. And he died. He died of syphilis at a very young age. I think he was like in his 49 or something.
He was practicing Judaism.
Yes. And so here we have this unpaid debt, and we got Winston Churchill, who always, always worked for the Jews.
Yeah, and then we have FDR, who was a banker's candidate from the very beginning.
And if you go back, in history, I believe that they were Jewish.
Yes, the Delano family.
The Roosevelt family, too.
Maybe Roosevelt's, too, but I know the Delanos are Jews, Dutch Jews, okay? Yeah. So there's a lot of Jewish blood there, and the Jews really ruled the roost in all three nations, your communist Russia, America, and Great Britain.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, and of course, none of this history is ever told. And even worse, Dwight D. Eisenhower, who was called by his classmates at West Point that Swedish Jew, okay?
Right.
He was a full-blooded Jew.
Well, that's debatable, too.
He murdered 2 million German soldiers after World War II.
Right.
Starving them to death in the concentration camps run by the Allies.
But a lot of them weren't even soldiers.
Right, yeah. This is genocide, Deanna.
Exactly.
Jewish genocide against the German people. And that's really what all World War II was about. Jewish genocide against mainly the German people, but in addition, all of Christendom, the Jews were making war. They had set up World War II so that white Christendom would annihilate itself under Jewish pretenses of war.
And it was also because of the Britain and of course the people who were behind the British government, the Jews, did not like the competition that Germany was presenting.
Absolutely.
And Bernard Baruch said, and I quote, "I emphasize that the defeat of Germany and Japan and their elimination from world trade would give Britain a tremendous opportunity to swell her foreign commerce in both volume and profit," unquote.
It was all about monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was about. It was monopoly. Yeah, yeah. Jewish monopoly. And if you can't beat the competition, or if the competition's beating you because they have a more efficient and better product, then what do you do? Well, you hire an army to kill them, to destroy their country. And that's what the Rothschilds did.
Yes.
That's really what World War II is all about.
And the other thing, of course, is that if the other countries saw what Hitler could do, that he could kick out these bankers and without having any gold in his country, totally revamp the country and put everybody to work. In fact, Baruch said, and I quote, "We are going to lick that fellow Hitler.
Yeah.
He isn't going to get away with it," unquote. And basically that was about the economic situation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because, like I said, world Jewry was so upset with Hitler's economic success, having kicked the Jewish bankers out, that he had to be made an example of.
Yes.
Had to be made, and you're
Forever.
forever. And you're absolutely right. If other countries, because look, the world was in the middle of a Great Depression. However, Germany had turned it around and had become the most prosperous country on the face of the earth.
Right.
The Jews could not allow other countries to follow that example.
Right.
All right? And it was I can't remember his name now. The Jew who actually made a radio address in New York City, Samuel
Anton Meyer.
Untermeyer. Samuel Untermeyer made the radio address declaring economic war against Germany in 1933.
Right.
Okay. So this is all recorded history, but the Jew-controlled media today and the Jew-controlled educational system will not inform anybody of these things. All you ever hear is how evil the Germans were, how evil the Nazis were, and the myth of the Holocaust, and all this is all you ever hear. But the reality is completely 180 degrees different. Okay.
Right.
So in Britain, you had a number of true patriots who understood the Jewish problem, okay? Who understood the power of the Rothschild banking family, right?
Right.
And the stranglehold that the Rothschilds had on British finance and the entire British economy, right?
Well, you know, speaking of Samuel Untermeyer, who was a New York lawyer. He donated generously to Wilson's campaign, and he's the guy that approached President Wilson with an interesting collection of letters that Bernard Baruch had purchased for $65,000 that Wilson wrote to his sweetheart, and he wasn't
Well,
married
was
to her,
married, yeah,
Mary
sweetheart.
Hulbert.
Yeah.
And so basically, they said, okay, you've either got to appoint Louis Brandeis to the Supreme Court when a vacancy occurs, or we're going to
Right.
reveal these letters. So
Yeah.
basically, look at the influence that this man had in both
Yes.
wars.
And even before that, Samuel Untermeyer was the handler of Cyrus Schofield, who
Really?
yes, he was. He was Schofield's handler, and he paid Schofield to compile all these notes for the Schofield Reference Bible.
Okay, you got to elaborate on that. That's
Yeah.
very interesting.
Yeah, well, there's a group called the Secret Six, and of course they're New York Jews who hired Schofield to put out a new version of the Bible, a new version of the Bible which would equate the Jewish people with the Israel of God. Okay? Where, up to this point, Deanna, we're talking about 1902, 1903, okay? Throughout history, the Jews were totally distrusted by the Christian world. This is the reason why the Jews were kept in ghettos in Europe.
Well,
Because
so you know, the rabbis wanted to keep them in ghettos because they were
that
so
too.
exclusive and so special that they
Yes.
didn't want them to assimilate.
Yeah, that's true to also. Yeah, it's a fact that the rabbis did not object to the ghetto system because that gave them a total control in a locality of their Jewish flock,
Right.
right? And they couldn't get away, right?
Yes.
They couldn't get away. So the rabbi had a guaranteed flock, right? Whether they liked him or not, right?
Right.
So, but the point of the ghettos was to prevent the Jews from exploiting Christians through usury.
Right. And I think that was also the issue with the Pale of Settlement in Russia.
Yes.
And that was a huge
Yes.
area. When you
Right.
consider, I mean, that was like a quarter of the whole landmass of Russia.
Guys. Well, okay, now this gets to the crux of the matter of why the Jewish people have always been hated wherever they go. Okay. And why the Jewish people cannot flourish unless they have a what's I'm trying to think of the word, a country, a prosperous country that
A
has
host.
a host country that has a prosperous economy. Okay.
Yes.
Because all the only games that the Jews know, since they don't farm, since they don't actually work with their hands, except in the diamond cutting industry and for a while in the garment industry, Jewish women worked very hard in the sweatshops of the
I
Jewish garment
yes, I but I
industry.
think there was a lot of other women that worked in the
Oh, of
sweatshops, you know, the
course, yes.
Irish and it was.
Absolutely, absolutely. But some Jewish women actually did work. But the vast majority of Jews have never done work with their hands. They're not carpenters, they're not farmers. In fact, their Talmud says the farming is a demeaning occupation, according to their Talmud. And the whole Jewish game plan is to infiltrate the professions, politics, doctors, lawyers, especially journalism, education. Those positions in society where they can gain influence over the host people.
Right, and also as a middleman to collect, as you
Yes.
said, because they don't like to work, but they like to lend money and
Exactly.
collect commissions and all that other stuff.
Yeah. Oh, middlemen. Look at Hollywood.
Yes.
They're Hollywood's agents. You
Yes.
can't get a job in Hollywood without a Jewish agent, right?
And without a few other things, according to Marilyn Monroe.
Yes. Right.
But we
Yeah.
won't talk about that.
Oh no, but she had to do that too, right?
Yes.
As many non-Jewish starlets had to do that, right?
Yes.
So, but this is the nature of Judaism. Wherever they have established themselves, it has been at the expense of the host population, and
Yes.
that is why the Jews have been expelled from over 200 historically. Over 200 city-states and nation-states in their history.
Wow.
And the Jews even admit this. They admit this. But their excuse is, well, the Christian world must have some kind of inbred subconscious hatred of Jews that causes these Jews to be expelled. It has nothing to do with with what the Jews do, mind you, right?
Right.
This is the Jewish excuse, right? But my answer to that is, well, if there was this inbred subconscious hatred of Jews, why would the Christian nations ever let them in the first place?
Indeed.
Okay? That's because these countries are not Jew savvy. They don't know what the Jews are and what parasites they are. Jewish culture is parasitic to the core, and Jewish culture cannot survive when there's only Jews around, because a parasite can't live off of the other parasites. The parasite has to have a host, right? That's why the Pale of the Settlement never worked for the Jews, even though, like you said, it was a huge territory. But since they don't farm and since they don't work with their hands, there was no basic economy.
Right, and they never put their money back into the community.
No,
They always did something else with it. I mean, they, for instance, in Poland, they lived in thatch-roofed shacks and you know hauled their water from elsewhere.
Yes,
And I'm talking about the
right.
poverty-stricken ones, or at least they seemed to live in poverty. It's because they hoarded all their money and did and sent it out of the country. They never contributed to the community.
Right. Yeah, because what every Jewish community has an overarching Jewish organization, either in the city, in the county, in the nation, and then of course internationally. And all of these Jewish groups are designed to control the Jewish masses, the lesser brethren, as the Jews call the Jewish masses, okay?
Right.
Who they exploit to. It's like this: you have to have the queen bee, or not the queen bee, because bees aren't parasites.
No,
I'm
they're
trying to.
pretty good
Yeah,
little insects.
right. I'm trying to think of an insect that's parasitic,
A cockroach.
All right, cockroach, right? Cockroach or certain types of ants. Certain types of ants are parasitic, right? So, and what they do is they parasitize off of another ant colony, and they actually kill the queen of the true ant colony, and the parasitic ant takes over. Okay? And they actually train the parasitic ants, actually train the host ants to work for the new queen. Right? This is what the Jews do, right? This is how they operate. So, it's of course through their money lending operations. This is always what they do. They, if it's a monarchy, the Jews will find some way to bribe the monarch, and if they can't bribe him, they'll assassinate him and install a friendly, relative of the monarch and put him on the throne. Okay? That's how they did it in monarchic Europe. And of course, their crowning achievement was the destruction of the European monarchies and substituting quote unquote democracy. Because democracy is very easily controlled by false information through the controlled media, right? And so the 20th century, some Jew called it the Jewish age, the Jewish century. And that's the fact, because the Jews took control of the world during the 20th century through their banking operations, through financing wars, through financing genocide, and allowing the Christian world to exhaust itself in wars that had no business being fought, while the Jews stood at the sidelines, collected the profits, and the Jewish population actually increased during World War II, about 5 million. It did not decrease by about 6 million. It actually increased, according to their own records, their own world Jewish population records, their population increased during World War II. They're the only population group whose population increased during World War II. Okay? So it's quite obvious that both World War I and World War II, and then the UN war in Korea, Vietnam, and every other war we've had, been fighting ever since, has been arranged by the Jews, by international Jewry, in order to destroy white Christian civilization. And that's the bottom line. Okay? And there were many in Britain who understood this during, and Arnold Liess was certainly one of them. Okay? And Adolf Hitler was certainly one of them too, right? Yeah. In fact, Adolf Hitler made a really great prophecy about the Israeli state. He said that the Israeli state would be a haven for Jewish criminals.
Right.
That's what it has been, right? They get caught doing something wrong in America or Britain or France, they run off to Israel, and there's no extradition treaty. Right? They're safe. Okay? That's all the Israeli state is. It's nothing but a sanctuary for Jewish criminals. That's all. In fact, the Zionist creed was, we need to have a nation of our own where all Jews can come back to Palestine, right? There's more Jews in New York City than there are in all of Palestine.
Right, I
They're
think
not
that there's 7 million, isn't aren't there?
They're not
in New
going to,
York?
They're not going to Palestine.
Yeah.
Because there's no, the parasite can't parasitize off its own people.
Right.
Have to stay in New York City to parasitize off of white Christian America,
Right.
right?
And of course, the Israeli state does that even from a distance,
That's right.
because they're still extracting money from the
Yes.
United States. I don't know how many billions they have extracted, and they are still extracting reparations payments from Germany.
That's right. That's right. And so the Jewish state is based on extortion.
Right. And then when they went in there, they destroyed 500 Palestinian
Yes.
villages and towns, and then took over the orange groves, took over all the agriculture that was already established.
Yes.
And it's, yeah, what basically have they done?
And all of this genocidal activity against the goyim, and everybody listening needs to understand that the Jews use the word goyim to describe all non-Jews, okay? And it's a term of derision. It's just like the word nigger is used for blacks. It's a term of derision, and the Jews use that term goyim for all non-Jews.
Right.
Consider us to be less than human. They consider themselves to be the only humans, and the rest of us goyim are subhuman. That is Jewish culture. That is Jewish philosophy. It's in their Talmud, and it's in their attitude towards us.
Right. And that's why you don't have a website anymore.
That's right, exactly. That's why, because my website exposes all these things about the Jews, right?
Right.
And they have such a stranglehold on information that, and here, let me put it this way. One of the reasons, and I think probably the main reason why my website had to be taken down is because the major voting block that the Jews have in America is the Christian Zionist Southern Bible Belt voting bloc, okay, where they, you know, these people en masse vote for the Jewish cause because they believe that the Jews are Israel, right?
Right, and that goes back to Scofield, right?
That's, it goes back to Scofield, exactly. And so this voting bloc, they cannot risk losing this voting bloc. My website exposes the fact that the Jewish people are not Israelites by any shape of the imagination. Their entire imposture, their entire impersonation as Israel is nothing but a concoction, a historical concoction that began in Judea in the days just before the days of Christ. And there's a reason why Revelation 2:9 and 3:9 state those who say they are Jews but are not, but are the synagogue of Satan.
Right.
Okay? And that word Jew is translated from the Greek Judeos, which simply means a citizen of the nation of Judea. It has no reference whatsoever to any tribal affiliation or to religious affiliation. It's simply, the word Judeos simply means someone who lives in Judea. Okay.
Okay.
And the problem is, and this is the reason why the Jews have expunged the Apocrypha from the intertestamental period, you know, between the end Malachi and the beginning of Matthew, there's a lot of Israelite literature which explains how the Israelites were being made war against by the local Edomites, Arabs, Samaritans, and other non-Israelite nations, and how the Israelites were trying to retain their separate status, their separate culture and religion, in the midst of all these enemies. Okay? That's the basic story of the Apocrypha. Once you read the Apocrypha, you find out that the Israelites had one major enemy, and that was the Edomites. Just as is explained throughout the Old Testament, the Edomites are thoroughly condemned in the book of Obadiah. In verse 18 of Obadiah, these Edomites are told by Yahweh himself that I will exterminate you for all of the evil you have committed against my people Israel. Okay?
Hmm.
Now these same people, the Edomites, began, and let me quote, because before we get into Arnold Leese, let me quote now from The Mask of Edom by William Norman Saxon, because he explains this so well that I can't improve upon his words. This is from his booklet, The Mask of Edom. The Jews masquerade. Now, before I even say anything else, the word Jew is not synonymous with the word Judah.
Okay.
This is a false impression that the Jews want you to have. They want you to assume that the word Jew is a nickname for Judah. No, it's not. The word Jew is a nickname for Judeos, meaning Judean. See, because Judea was a multicultural state, and the Jews promote multiculturalism wherever they go, right?
Mm-hmm.
With themselves as the head multicultural Animal Farm, George Orwell was simply, I mean, I'm sorry, Animal Farm by George Orwell was simply a tale about how the Jews are more equal than others, right?
Yes, you're right.
Okay.
Now,
And,
was this the tribe of Judah?
that's right. That's right, but he was
Okay.
not a Jew. And remember when Pontius Pilate asked him, "Are you king of the Jews?" He said, "You say I am." Because Jesus was not the king of a multicultural state. He was the king of Israel, not the king of a multicultural state. Okay? He was an Israelite through a direct descendant of David, as Matthew 1 and Luke chapter 3 clearly. That's why those genealogies are in there, to prove that he was a direct descendant of David, who was not a Jew, he was a Judahite. There's a huge difference. A Judahite is a direct descendant of Judah. A Jew is a half-breed, at best, of Edom, which is the descent of Esau. Okay? And the Judeo-Christian world, the Jewish world and the Judeo-Christian world have gone to great pains to expunge the history of the conflict between the Judahites and the Edomites in the intertestamental period, and the fact that the Pharisees were Edomite priests set up by Herod, who was also an Edomite. He was a usurper. He was not of the house of Judah at all. And that's why Herod was struck with fear when the Magi came and said, "Well, we heard that the Messiah's been born." Right? And Herod was struck with fear. Well, why should he be struck with fear? If he were a Judahite, he would be rejoicing. Ah, the Messiah has come, right? But he was an Edomite. And the Edomites just pretend to be Judah. So, my definition of a Jew is one who pretends to be a Judahite or an Israelite. Okay? A true Judahite has nothing to do with the Jews, because the Bible forbids us to associate with Edomites. It absolutely forbids us to associate with Edomites. Okay? And this is very clear from the scriptures, but because the Jews have had a monopoly on Bible interpretation for the last 2,000 years, and the Judeo-Christian world has simply taken their word for everything. And this was prophesied by Paul in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, where he says that the Christians would be subject to a great delusion. And they are most definitely subject to a great delusion. It's called Judeo-Christianity, as you've heard me say several times, right? Okay, so let me quote William Norman Saxon from The Mask of Edom. "The Jews masquerade as the Lord's chosen people is undoubtedly the greatest hoax in history. This is the basis of the anti-God conspiracy of which Asaph spoke." Asaph is one of the contributors to the Psalms in the Book of Psalms. "The plan began to evolve among the Jews in Babylon, who now, and this also was a multicultural state. And what happened was that non-Judahites in Babylon, namely the Sepharvaim, that's where you get the word Sephardic Jew from. The Sepharvaim of Babylon, they were Babylonian Edomites who began showing an interest in Judahite religion because it spoke of the chosen people, and they wanted to be the chosen people, right? Okay, so here's how William Norman Saxon puts it. "The plan began to evolve among the Jews in Babylon, who, as the historian H.G. Wells wrote, found the idea of belonging to a chosen race predestined to eminence was a very attractive one." H.G. Wells had these people figured out. If they could foist themselves off on the world as Israel, their grandiose ambitions for world dominion would be greatly enhanced. They began to claim Abraham for their father and thrust their company upon the remnant of the true Judahites in Babylon. The true Judahites, like their Israelite kinsmen, who were taken northward in the Assyrian captivities were never known as Jews, nor had they been called Jews while in Palestine. As Wells wrote, quote, "The main part of Jewry was never even in Judea." Right? Of course, we know today the main part of Jewry is the Ashkenazi Khazars. That's what he's referring to. So 95% of the world's Jews today have no Shemitic blood in them whatsoever.
Right.
They're Ashkenazis.
And you know, it's very interesting. You bring up H.G. Wells. And basically, he was a Fabian socialist. He was, you know, part of that group that at the London School of Economics, and he knew a lot about, you know, because he was part of the Fabian Society, which basically also promoted and funded the Bolsheviks in their first revolution in 1905.
Yeah, these are the Blue Bloods.
Yep.
Who joined with the Jews because they had economic advantage.
Yes.
Jews by joining them.
Yeah.
In this. That's why I brought up the Bushes earlier.
Yeah.
That's the only one who brought them up. Okay. So you have these various Blue Bloods, and William Randolph Hearst is another one who joined the Jews because the economic advantage of playing their game versus competing against them was, you know, more attractive.
Right. Well, you know, when Churchill came over here in 1929 to kind of facilitate the crash and watch it from, you know, from close up, he stayed, he and his son, and I believe another gentleman, stayed at the Hearst Mansion in California and, you know, chatted about how they were going to do this in the world and do that in the world. And so these people, you know, there's no boundaries for them.
No.
No borders, no boundaries.
Money knows no nationality.
No, that's how true. How true.
It knows no nationality. So with that setting the stage, and I think our discussion is going to take more than one show because we have to talk about Israelite history, the Jewish impersonation of history, and how that has been misunderstood by the vast majority of, you know, Jew savvy historians.
Right.
Okay. And I'm talking, there's only been two groups that understand that the Jews are not God's chosen people, Israel. And that is British Israel. Okay. And they go back fairly far into the mid 1800s. And Christian identity here in America, which actually goes back to Henry Ford. Henry Ford was actually the founder, unintentionally, of the Christian identity movement in America.
Really?
Right? He was, because his editor, I can't think of his name right now. He wrote a book about the Christian identity, and it was called it's on my bookshelf here somewhere. I'll think of it though. But his editor wrote a book about the migrations of the 12 tribes, showing that the Caucasian people are, in fact, the Israel of the Bible and the Jews are not.
But where did he get his information? Did he do it from the Bible or?
Yes, absolutely. And he was conversant with other people in British Israel. You know, the Herbert W. Armstrong group here in America, he had a very large church. It has many offshoot churches. They also taught that the Caucasian people are the 10 tribes, okay? But at the same time, they taught that the Jews are the tribe of Judah, okay? Where Christian identity differs from the Herbert Armstrong people and the British Israel people is we say, no, the Jews can't possibly be Israel because 95% of them, by their own admission, are Ashkenazi Khazars, all right? They can't possibly be Israel. And Deanna, what is the basis of the Jewish claim to occupying Palestine? It's their claim that they are Israel.
Yes.
They would have no claim to that land if the world didn't believe that they were Israel.
And if the Rothschilds had not founded Zionism in London.
Yes.
Early in the 1800s.
Yes,
and so And then you have to look at all the Christian churches that are infiltrated, that are corporations,
Yes.
and wonder, where did they get this ideas? Because they were infiltrated.
Right. And part of World War One was the Balfour Declaration, and this is why. And I have to credit Benjamin Friedman, who was a Jew, who was actually the secretary of Bernard Baruch for a very long time. He was also the owner of the Woodbury Soap Company,
Oh,
and
he was? Friedman was?
Benjamin Friedman was the owner of the Woodbury Soap Company. And he was Bernard Baruch's secretary, and he was privy to all of this financial sabotage of white Christian nations during World War One and World War Two. He wrote a book called Facts Are Facts. This book is must reading for every Christian and for every thinking person on the planet, because he explains how world Jewry betrayed Germany.
Now,
Okay,
he spoke before Congress and told them about this. He told them
yes.
about the Khazars,
This is part of the congressional record, yes.
and they did nothing
Nothing. Right.
be
They did
because
nothing.
they were because they were benefactors of this whole program to begin with.
Yes. Well, Dwight D. Eisenhower was president at the time, right? Okay. There's really nothing Congress could do. And of course, the whole McCarthy era, where McCarthy was exposing all the communists in the army and the State Department, 99% of which were Jews. Okay. And so they had to censure McCarthy because he was exposing too much of the Jewish program behind the scenes in America. And that's why McCarthy must be demonized almost as badly as Adolf Hitler has been demonized, right? Okay? Because these people have exposed the Jewish world plan of total dictatorship, Bolshevik dictatorship.
You know,
Okay?
it's always amazing to me, Eli, how so many of the Christian churches just feel like it's perfectly okay to go to war, to have the U.S. military go into all of these countries and just slaughter people.
Right.
I don't get it.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, the motto of most of these churches is, "What would Jesus do?"
Yeah.
Right? So, would Jesus go in and slaughter people who never heard a fly?
No, I don't get it.
Yeah,
How
it's
are they
absurd.
not thinking? What's
Of course,
wrong
they're
with
not
these
thinking.
people?
It's brainwashing, right? They don't realize that there's a moral comparison here that must be made, right? Where does Jesus stand in all this? The golden rule is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Okay? The Palestinians never hurt a Jew, ever. In fact, when the Zionists, who are primarily the Ashkenazi, non-Semitic, totally non-Semitic Jews, okay, invaded Palestine, the existing Sephardic Jews who had lived there for 2,000 years, they were actually getting along well with the Palestinian people, both the Muslim and Christian Palestinians. In fact, I heard testimony by a Jew who, was living among them in those days, and he said of the Palestinians that we babysat each other's kids.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, but I thought, no, did I read that somewhere or not?
Right. Yeah. And the Sephardic rabbis in Palestine originally rejected the entire idea of Zionism. But
Amazing.
okay, they did. They actually rejected the entire idea of Zionism. And there are still Jews today, such as Naturai Karta, who say that we can't occupy Palestine until the Messiah comes, right? So they're just a Jewish sect that believes that, right? So the entire occupation of Palestine by these Ashkenazi Jews is 100% fraudulent. They have no business being there because they're not Israel. Okay, now let me just quickly get into the Sephardic Jews and their true origin, and then we can start proceeding into the Arnold Lee story and the secular view of the Bible and how the Jews are the main people of the Bible according to them. Okay, and of course that's the wrong idea. But the Sephardic Jews, as I said, originated, the name comes from the Sepharvaim of Babylon. Okay. The Sepharvaim of Babylon were placed in the vicinity of Judah by the Assyrians when the Assyrians took the Israelites away to the north to Armenia and Media. They simply left the land empty. But then after a while, they took a group of people, several groups of people from Babylon, including the Sepharvaim, and relocated them to Judea. So these people were not Israelites. They were Babylonian Canaanites. And what happened was, along with the Samaritans and the Arabs and the Sepharvaim and the Edomites that were already there, okay, that living in that territory, Idumea, it was adjacent to the kingdom of Judah. It was to the south. Idumea, that is the land of the Edomites, was always to the south of Judah. And it bordered. There was a border between Judah and Edom throughout the history of the tribes of Israel and the Edomites. Okay, and they were always making war with each other. So what happened was there was the local people who were there, the Edomites, Canaanites, Arabs, etc., and these newly transplanted Sepharvaim began to be attacked by lions. And they pled to their local gods to get rid of these lions, but they weren't able to do it. So they asked the Assyrians to send in a Levite, a Levitical priest, to teach them the religion that the Israelites had practiced while they lived there. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This was how the Sepharvaim learned the religion of the Israelites.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
But of course this was forbidden. You know, Yahweh told us in Deuteronomy chapter 7, we are not to have anything to do with Edomites. We are not to make any covenants with them. No, we should have no agreements with them. We are not to marry our sons and daughters off to them. We are supposed to remain completely separate and distinct from them. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And for part, the Israelites did this, but there were lapses, and sometimes they made leagues with the Jews that they never should have done. And so when I use the word Jew, I'm talking about these Edomites, Canaanites, etc., these imposters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so when I use the word Judah, I'm talking about the literal house of people of Judah, and Israel, the literal house and people of Israel. There are two different categories. Israel is one group of people. The Jews are completely separate people. They never. There is no common origin, genetic origin, except for one person, namely Esau.
Mm-hmm.
Esau was the brother of Jacob. Esau despised his birthright. He was the elder brother. He despised his birthright, sold it to Jacob, and then he went off and married Hittite wives, which is forbidden. He broke the covenant rule. All right, Deuteronomy 7 says, you shall not marry these Canaanite women.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what he did. So Esau's parents, Isaac and Rebekah, threw him out. And he moved to a land called Edom. That's where the Edomites come from. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So his history is in the scriptures. It's in the Bible. But the Jews will never relate this history because they pretend that Edom has already vanished. All right, or if they still exist, it's the Palestinians, right? That's what they teach, right? And the Judeo-Christians are totally clueless, utterly clueless about any of this history, because modern Christians don't care anything about history. All they care about is their dogma, which is, you know, that their pulpiteers preach every day, right? There's nothing historical about it. There's actually very little scriptural about it, and there's very little truth in it. Okay, and I've basically made a career out of exposing the false teachings of both Judaism and modern Judeo-Christianity. All right, and but both in both cases, and this brings us to Arnold Liess. Arnold Liess assumed that the Jewish religion is the Old Testament religion. Okay, and that's what most modern secular critics of Judaism assume. But this is the big lie. This is the big lie that Jews have foisted off on the world, that they are the Israel of the Bible and they are not. So once you assume that the Jews are Israel, you're just going to make all kinds of mistakes and false assumptions about the Old Testament being Jewish when it's not. Okay?
Okay.
And so we can get into that very specifically. But here, let me go into Arnold Liess's document here, which is called The Great Jewish Mask, or The Ass in the Lion's Skin. Okay? The Bible puts it this way, the wolf in sheep's clothing.
Ah.
Right?
Okay. Yes.
And he quotes an old Persian saying that says, good woods burn silently, but thorns crackle loudly, crying out all the time, we are wood, we are wood. Okay? Well, this actually mimics what the Jews do. See, Israelite wood burns silently, but Jews...
Right. They complain.
All the time. We are Israel. We are Israel.
Right.
Okay? It's a lie. It's the, as William Norman Saxon stated, it's the world's oldest charade. Okay? So, and then his opening statements are, the Jews, like other childish people, enjoy pretending, and when pretending brings them the tribute due to the character assumed, they revel in it. But as we were talking about earlier, they're parasites. And their basic aim is whenever they enter a country is to take over that country's institutions and redirect all of the energy of that country to giving the Jews more power and wealth. Okay?
Right.
That's how they've always operated throughout history. History does not change. Wherever the Jews gravitate, that country becomes, it's just a matter of time. Within two or three generations, that country belongs to the Jews. Okay? He continues, in this way they have obtained much credit, which should not have been given to them. Right? As H.G. Wells said, they're not Semites. They're not Israelites.
Now, did he say that?
Yeah, well, he said the main part of Jewry was never in Palestine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's how he put it, right?
Okay.
I mean, I don't think he stated specifically that Jews are not Israelites. You know?
No.
However, you can use logic,
right?
Right, to understand what he meant. Okay, then he says they first were tricked out in borrowed traditions and supplied with with an entirely false idea of themselves about 430 BC, and I think he's referring to the Babylonian era. Then commenced the great Jewish mask, a pretense which has been maintained to the present day. And that's absolutely correct. Okay.
Right.
All right. But he's still assuming that the Jews are the Israel of the Bible. Okay. And that's incorrect. So to their great credit, these secular critics of the Jews understand that Judaism is a religion of lies, that the Jewish people are a people of chameleons who will assume any identity, play any role, act out any part to fool the host people into accepting them. Okay? And this is how they ingratiate themselves into the host nation, and then once they take control, then they start raping, murdering, robbing, pillaging and destroying that nation that they have infiltrated, as you can see is happening to America today. Right? They did the exact same thing to Germany during the Weimar Republic.
Right. And, okay. And before that, I mean, they got their clutches in, their claws into Germany right after the 1848 revolution.
Just revolution, exactly. They took over Poland. Obviously, they took over Spain. That's why Queen Isabella kicked them out.
Right.
It took over Portugal. There's virtually no, and they had taken over England three or four times and had been kicked out of England at least three times.
Right.
Okay? And they always weasel their way back in. They weaseled their way back in with Cromwell by financing his army,
Right.
and then they let them back in.
Yep.
Okay? This is how they do it. It's always through economics, through economic control. And then one of Cromwell's successors, I believe it was Charles II, was bribed into giving the charter for the Bank of England, which is a private Jewish bank. It's not the Bank of England. Just like our Federal Reserve is a private Jewish bank, it's not an American bank by any means. Okay? So this is the type of skullduggery, sabotage, subterfuge by which the Jews operate and have operated throughout history. And unfortunately, the Christian world is just not interested. They're just not interested. Okay.
Which is amazing. Is it because they don't, because they're ignorant, they don't know,
Yeah.
because they've been fooled, brainwashed through their churches and through
Right.
the media and through the educational apparatus?
Yes. Yeah. Because all these institutions have been taken over by the Jews, and they simply teach the Jewish version of history, which is
Right.
lies. It's all lies.
Right.
Okay? And so we're probably not going to have time to get into it in this episode, but I want to talk about what I call the Marks of Israel, which is one of the most damning documents against Jewry, because it shows that the prophecies made in the Old Testament about the Israel people were never fulfilled by the Jews. They have always been fulfilled by the Caucasian people and no one else. Okay? And so once you realize the prophetic outworking of the Old Testament prophecies and many of the New Testament prophecies, you can see that the Jews don't have any part in these prophecies. For example, Jesus Christ said that when he sent the apostles out, he said, "You shall not have gone over the cities of Israel until the Son of Man be come." That is when he comes back the second time, right?
Right.
What he was referring to was the fact that the Caucasian Israelites would build thousands of cities all over the world in the subsequent 2,000 years. Deanna, the Jews have never built a single
Anything.
city. Never.
Exactly.
They didn't even build Jerusalem. The Israelites built Jerusalem, right?
Right.
Jews just took it over.
Indeed.
Okay? And the Jews have taken over all of our big cities worldwide. Like I said, we talked about it
Well,
earlier.
London, Washington, Paris, all those cities.
They take over all of these cities because they flourish in cities. They don't farm. They don't work with their hands. So the only thing they can do is engage in the professions, and they make sure that the professions they go into exploit the Christians. Okay?
Wow.
Judaism is a rich religion of total exploitation, and it does not adhere to the laws of Moses in any way, shape, or form. They just pretend to follow the laws of Moses. Everything in their Talmud is totally anti-Mosaic. This is the greatest charade in history. Jesus Christ told the Pharisees, "If you had believed Moses, you would believe me."
Right.
They don't believe Moses. They pretend to believe Moses. But they hate Christ so much that they can't bring themselves to even say, "Well, maybe we believe he's the Messiah." No, they hate him.
Right.
Every Jew is taught to absolutely hate Jesus Christ.
Well, it's in the Talmud.
Yes, it's a Talmud. Exactly. Yeah. But the average Christian has never even heard the word Talmud. Deanna, I performed a wedding at a church in the southwest side. It was a smaller denomination, a beautiful church. And I had a chance to talk to the head pastor of the church. And he asked me, "Well, what is Christian identity all about?" And I told him, "Well, first of all, our position is that we, the Caucasian people are the Israelites of the Bible. And number two, we totally oppose Zionism. Okay? And his response to me, Deanna, was, "What's Zionism?"
Okay. Really?
Yeah. What's Zionism? So you can see the tremendous level of ignorance that is occurring in the Judeo-Christian churches.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, are there particular churches that really promote the Jewish agenda and really promote the Jews? What are some of those churches?
Well, the entire evangelical class, you know, the Southern Baptists, Episcopalians, you know, all of them. There's only one denomination. I think the Quakers occasionally make anti-Zionist noises, right? And then there's a couple other smaller denominations. I think the Missouri Synod came out against, you know, the Jewish occupation of Palestinians, right?
Mm-hmm.
But these are very small denominations. The vast majority have been taken over by the Schofield School, all mm-hmm. right? And here in Chicago, the Moody Bible Institute teaches Schofield theology. The Dallas Theological Seminary teaches Schofield theology, and the biggest seminaries all over the place, if they don't actually use the Schofield Reference Bible, they teach virtually the same thing. Okay.
And of course, they were socializing those seminaries early in the 1800s.
That's right. And in recent times, within the last 20 years, Bob Jones University and Oral Roberts University had to change their segregationist Christianity and, you know, under threats from the ADL, you know, began joining the Zionist ideology, okay,
wow.
under great duress. But this is what the Jews do. Now, if they can't buy you off, they will threaten you and intimidate you, and if they have to, and we talked about it last time, how the ADL intimidated the state of Georgia, you know,
right.
to try to get their rapist murderer off the hook.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Leo Frank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is what they do to the churches, but, you know, but what they usually do is they get key theologians under to bring in rabbis to explain to the Christian theologians what their version of the Old Testament is, right? And so the Christian world basically accepts the Jewish version of the Old Testament, which is all lies.
Wow.
Right? And so they're totally in the dark, and that has led to the theology called dispensationalism. Okay. Dispensationalism is the evangelical version of the Old Testament, which says, well, yeah, the Jews are God's chosen people. They are the Israel of the Bible. But since they rejected Christ, they have to, you know, they have to endure being put away, you know,
right.
put in a covenant. But the Bible says that Israel will live forever and that the Israelites would accept Jesus as the Messiah. Okay, the Jews have never done any such thing, right?
Right.
And only the true Caucasian Israelites have fulfilled any of the prophecies in the Old Testament. For example, the Old Testament says that the Israelites would be a nation of farmers. Has that ever been true of the Jews?
No.
No.
That
they would be a great military empire in their own right, possessing the gates of their enemies. The Jews have had no military throughout history until the Israeli state.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
That the Israelites would be a great seafaring people.
Mm-hmm.
The Jews have been landlocked throughout
right.
their history.
Right.
Right? And as I mentioned earlier, the Israelites would build hundreds, if not thousands, of cities, such that the gospel could not be brought to them until just before the very end. And we're talking about right now.
Right.
So when you actually read the Bible, if you actually read the Bible, you find that the Jewish impersonation of Israel becomes patently obvious. There's no way that they can be the Israel of God. Absolutely no way. Okay? So let me continue here. In recent times, it has never lacked support, talking about this Jewish masquerade. Okay? Mm-hmm. And of course, we just talked about it. The educational system supports it. They build Holocaust museums at taxpayer expense, right?
Right.
In the textbooks. And you can't debate it.
You know, right. If you do, you're going to get in trouble. Or you're going to be called an anti-Semite or a Holocaust denier or in some countries put in jail.
Right. I remember Skip Baker, who has become one of my best supporters.
Isn't he? He is amazing.
Yeah, right. He's a really fun guy.
Yes.
And he always believed that the Jews were God's chosen people.
No.
And yes, he did. He did. Until he read my article, Jesus Was Not a Jew. And he told me, he said, I saw that title, and I laughed. I said, of course Jesus was a Jew. How could anybody possibly say that Jesus was not a Jew?
Now, when did he read this?
Oh, about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. Okay, something like that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And so, but he was so intrigued by the title that he said, well, I have to read this because this is so crazy. This is so insane. I have to read this. And so he started reading it, and his jaw dropped, and he was flabbergasted because I had simply laid out the actual history of Judea in the days of Christ and how the scribes and Pharisees and the Herodians had taken over the country by usurious, you know, well, here's what happened. Antipater, who was Herod's father, both of them are Edomites. They're not Judahites. They're the enemy. They're members of the enemy people, the Edomite people, the enemies of Judah and Israel, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Antipater bribed Julius Caesar. It's to install his son Herod as the governor of Galilee, okay? Through this policy of bribery and infiltration of the Roman Empire, these Edomites, because these Canaanites, Edomites were traders. Most of them were very wealthy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so they had bribe money, okay? This is what Josephus records in Antiquities of Judah.
Mm-hmm.
Tells us how Antipater bribed Julius Caesar to install his son Herod as governor of Galilee. Then Mark Antony formed a league with Herod, and the two of them together invaded the city of Jerusalem and took over the city.
Mm-hmm.
This was an invasion by Edomites and Romans in league with one another. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is why Herod is a complete phony. He had no business taking over the country. All right. He was an enemy
mm-hmm.
of the Judahites. And during his reign, the women of Judah had daily demonstrations telling him that he should get lost because he is not a Judahite. We want the throne given back to our people. Get lost, you Edomite SOB, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really, this is what Josephus tells us. But nobody reads Josephus because especially secular white people and white Christians who don't have any interest in Judaism.
Well, people don't read books anymore anyway. I mean, they're too busy with the glued to the TV and glued to their newspapers that they just simply don't read.
That's by design too, isn't it?
Yes, it sure is.
There is, okay. So the whole ball game here in the modern era is for the Jews to dumb us down so drastically that there's hardly a literate person on the planet, okay? And the conversation that you and I are having right now can't even take place within the vast majority of public education graduates today, right?
Right. Oh, absolutely.
They don't even have our vocabulary. This is how bad it's gotten. And it's all by design.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, they're destroying the language.
Yes.
And if you see teenagers texting on their cell phones, I mean, they don't even use the language anymore.
They don't.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's amazing that the public schools, they don't teach English.
No.
They don't. They'll teach, street jargon, right?
Right.
They'll mix in words from Spanish and whatever, you know. What was that UN language they tried to push I can't think of it now, but Ebonics,
Right.
right? Right? Which is black street talk, mixed with English, right?
Right. Well.
How are you going to get a job speaking Ebonics,
Right.
right? And they're sabotaging all students, black, white, yellow, it doesn't matter. All people are being sabotaged by this garbage called education, right?
Right.
And so let's continue with Lena. I just went into the usurpation of Judah by the Edomites to show what really happened. And of course, Arnold Leese and other British patriots of his time, and there were many, they have no knowledge of the scripture of what I just related to you. They simply accept the Jewish claim to being Israel, but they know that the Jews are evil, right?
Right.
So they have concluded, well, the Bible must be evil too, because look at Judaism, right?
Oh.
So they don't understand that the whole thing is an impersonation. So when I speak before neo-Nazi groups and white nationalist groups, I ask them a simple question. You know that the Jews are evil, right? You know that the Jews are the biggest liars on the face of the planet. Why do you believe them when they claim to be Israel?
Now, you say that you speak before neo-Nazis and white nationalists. Where do you do this at, and why do you do that?
Well, I mean, there's I supported Art Jones, who ran for Congress, and he's the head of a white nationalist political party. I've spoken before skinheads, the Hammerskins, the Ku Klux Klan. I've spoken before all of them because they need to know that the Jewish charade is far worse than they imagine. Yes, go ahead.
When I think of neo-Nazis, I think of people with skinheads with earrings and tattoos.
Right? Yep. Yeah, exactly. Well, see, on their behalf, they understand that the Jewish people are evil, and that they know all about the Rothschilds, they know about Goldman Sachs, they know all these things. Judeo-Christians are clueless about these things, right? So they have a good understanding of the immense Jewish evil that exists in the world today, right? But they still believe that the Jews are Israel of the Bible, right? So that's why I go to speak before them to explain to them that that's not true. Jewish evil is far deeper than you imagine, and their whole charade as Israel is their raison d'être, the basic reason why they have duped the entire world to accepting their agenda.
Okay, the
Okay?
other thing about the neo-Nazis is,
Yeah.
I mean, they call that's supposed to be new Nazis. Well, the
Right.
Nazis were not like that.
No, they weren't.
They didn't shave their heads, they didn't have tattoos, they didn't have earrings, and they were decent,
Right.
hardworking people. So why are they?
And Hitler was not an anti-Christian either.
No,
Many
so what are
aren't.
they trying to do here?
Well, yeah. Well, they don't understand, and because they're a product of the public education system that we just talked about, right? And that's why I speak before them to explain that. Well, hey, first of all, Hitler was not like this, right? So why don't you behave like Hitler? If you want to be a neo-Nazi, then you need to know Hitler a little better than you do, right? And so I explained to them how Hitler revived the German economy. Many of them don't even know about that, right? And how the Jews declared war against Germany because of that, right? So and then I take it back further, and that Hitler was not an anti-Christian, so don't you be an anti-Christian. All right, so basic points like this, just to get them thinking a little bit, right? And then typically after a presentation I do, several of them will come up to me and ask questions about identity, and because it begins to make sense to them that this really is the way things are, and if the Jews are in fact imposters, then all of history becomes more easy to explain, right? So why would God support these people who do nothing but evil?
Exactly. Why would they?
He doesn't. He But he's using them. And here's what the basic message of the gospel is, that Yahweh is using the Jews to explain to us how not to do things and to overcome our gullibility. And this is exactly what Paul talks about in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, that we are a deluded people, and because we do not love the truth, we become gullible. And you have to have a love for the truth. The vast majority of Christians today do not have a love for the truth. They love dogma, right?
Yeah.
But don't love the truth. And he says, and this is the same reason why he expelled the Israelites in the first place in 745 BC, because they were practicing paganism.
Right.
All right? And so I'm going to kick you out, and I'm going to straighten you in the wilderness, right? So he expelled us. The Caucasian people appeared on the other side of the Caucasus Mountains at the exact same time that the Israelites were expelled from Palestine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the history books never investigate, well, where did these Caucasians come from? Apparently they fell off the mountain, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
They never investigate, well, where'd they come from? Well, there's the pass that's today called the Dariel Pass in the Caucasus Mountains is still today called the Pass of Israel by the local people, because that's where the Israelites crossed from Media and Armenia over into the Caucasia, and they first settled in the area of Ar Sereth by the River Sereth, which is a tributary of the Danube River that dumps into the Crimean Sea,
mm-hmm.
Okay, which is the Black Sea, all right? The Danube River is named by the tribe of Dan,
mm-hmm.
because they sailed up that river and named it after themselves. Okay. So, I mean, my book, The Great Impersonation, documents all this history that has been memory-holed by the Jews. See, the Jews, they go around to libraries, and they steal the books, and they never see the light of day.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is really quite amazing. I had a book. It was written by a doctor friend of mine, Dr. Mohammed Meraki, and it's called Afghanistan After Democracy.
Okay.
And it has all of these pictures of these babies that are born with horrific, horrific birth defects because of the depleted uranium weaponry that the U.S. government uses over there. And I bought a few copies of his book, and I tried to give one to my local library, and the person that was evaluating the book kept it for like a month, and I'd call and say, well, have you decided yet? And she said, oh, I haven't decided yet. And finally, she gave it back to me, and she said, no, it's too graphic.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, okay, but you're willing to have R-rated movies,
yes.
You know, carry R-rated movies and all kinds of other garbage.
Yes.
Graphic garbage.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not willing to have this book. That is the truth.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, well, my friend, Christopher Ballin, when he, you know, he's published all kinds of articles about the fact that the Jews were behind 9/11.
Right.
Right. And his family, the Ballin family, actually helped establish the library, the town library in Schaumburg, Illinois.
Which is a gorgeous library.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, he tried to get his book carried by that library, and they refused.
Right. I met him there at that library.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so his own family. You know, one of the founding families of the library. You know, he can't get his books to be carried there.
Right.
Why? Well, it's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
The Jews don't want anything that exposes them to be in any library.
Right.
And they will go to great lengths. I'll give you another anecdote. A friend of mine who is a teacher in Schaumburg, and his brother is a mathematician, okay? And he told me his brother had take this mathematics course, and that the only place that the books were available was in the library. And he said, well, the Jewish students would keep these books out constantly so that none of the other classmates could get their hands on them.
Oh my.
This is what they would do, right? So this is what Christians don't understand. The Jewish people are taught by their rabbis to be ferociously anti-white and anti-Christian. They are the most racist, supremacist people on the face of the earth, but then they go out in public and posture as the most tolerant people in the world, right?
All right.
Getting back to Arnold Lees. Then commenced a great Jewish mask, a pretense which has been maintained to the present day. We can update this to 2012, right?
Right.
In recent times, it has never lacked support. That is this Jewish mask idea. Indeed, Jewish propaganda has been so insidious and persistent that voluntary aid, in addition to other kinds, has always been available, right? So what the Jews do is they go around pretending that their organizations are do-good, philanthropic organizations, right? And then they solicit donations from people with good intentions, and the money goes to the ADL or the Mossad.
Right. Well, they want to appear very humanitarian.
Yes.
And that's also very profitable because they get all of this money, as you just said.
Exactly. Exactly. And so typically you'll find, you know, these local streetwise and, you know, other local operations that supposedly help homeless kids and homeless people, right? They're all run by Jews. And these Jews use these as tax-exempt organizations, sometimes as tax shelters, and sometimes as money laundering operations, okay? So in other words, the Jews, the lesser brethren who have money, they can donate their money to one of these Jewish-run operations, but the money goes elsewhere,
right?
You have a token operation with a pool table and, toys for tots, right, and that sort of thing, but the whole thing is nothing but a sham.
Right.
And a money laundering operation. This is what the Jews do.
Well, and their friends do the same thing.
Yes.
Their political friends do the very same thing.
Exactly.
Like when the Bush and Clinton families got together after the earthquake in Haiti, and they collected all this money, and they ended up building a very fancy hotel down there.
Right.
And the people who were suffering from the earthquake never got a cent.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, and in fact, the recent report came out that the Fed was that the banks, you know, after the housing collapse, you know, around 2006 to 2008, the banks stopped lending money. Now, why would you stop lending money if there's people who want to borrow money and get the economy rolling again? Okay, well, the reason why was because the Fed was operating branch banks and other corporate banks such a good rate of return by just keeping their money at the Fed that they were making more money in interest with the Fed than by lending the money out.
Huh.
A friend of mine in Branson, he lost 17 consecutive sales because the banks refused to lend money to the buyer.
Wow.
And that caused them to quit the real estate business. And this was right after the housing collapse. The banks simply stopped lending money. Why? Because they were earning more interest by just keeping their money in the Fed bank than by lending it out.
Right.
Right?
Well, I think of Rod Blagojevich and Republic Windows and Doors back in...
okay.
What year was that?
That was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah.
Right, and he announced that he was going to, he had a press release, and he said that the state of Illinois was no longer going to do business with the Bank of America because they refused to lend money to Republic Doors and Windows.
Yeah,
and right. So the very next day, the cops were there at, 6 a.m.? And arrested him.
Yeah.
And he's got 14 years in jail now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he stepped on Bank of America's toes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it was in December 8th, 2008, and December 9th they arrested him.
Right.
And the thing is that the Bank of Illinois, the Bank of America, had just recently received this big bailout.
Right. Yeah, so why can't they lend money to a small struggling company?
Right. They had, what, almost 300 employees.
Right.
And because he did this, he got 14 years because they dug up some other dirt on him, the same kind of dirt they have on all the politicians.
Yeah, especially Obama.
Yes, but can you imagine? Yes, especially Obama. But can you imagine 14 years? I mean, there are serial killers that don't get that long.
Right. Yeah, and maybe he did practice graft. The Democrats do that all the
That's
time, right?
part of the political process, part of the political
Yeah,
environment.
right. You skin, what's it, grease the palms of the
Right.
politician. That's the way it works, right?
Yes.
Yeah, when the Jews take over. Yeah, right. So, yeah, and it's deplorable that the Bank of America refused to lend that money to save that company and save all those jobs. And at the same time, these banking corporations are exporting jobs to China, right?
Yes.
And they're importing illegal aliens to drop our wages down.
Right.
It is all Jew politics. All
Right.
of it. It's Jew politics. So Arnold Liest continues here. The mask, naturally, is extremely popular with Jews. He refers to them as carpetbaggers because people who are in the know that the carpetbaggers during Reconstruction were all Jews. In fact, General Grant had issued orders to throw these Jews out because they were, disrupting the local economy.
Right, but
Right?
he quickly changed. He
Yeah.
did a really a big about face.
Right. Well, because the Jews have so much power, just like
Exactly.
with the ADL and Leo Frank,
Yep.
they put pressure on the politicians, and all of a sudden there's an about face in policy.
Right.
Yeah. Nobody knows why. No explanation. Right?
Yeah.
And then he says, everything possible is done to keep the Jews in the mask, apart from other people, submissive to the will of the international directors and enthusiastically working for the greater glory of the showmen who use them. Right? Judaism is nothing but a gigantic theater of religion. And but it's really getting back to Babylon. The religion of Judaism has always been mixed in with international banking and money lending. There has never been a time when Judaism and banking have not gone together. Okay? It goes back to ancient Babylon, where the fractional reserve banking system was invented. Okay? Those clay tablets, many of which are receipts for goods, many of those are bank drafts. Interest-bearing bank drafts. Many of them were fraudulently released as fraudulent promissory notes for goods on hand, just the way they do, issue paper money today, right?
Right.
This all began in ancient Babylon, but the Jews who returned, the Judahites who returned from Babylon were pure-blooded Judahites who did not practice money lending. In fact, when they came back from Babylon, they instituted a golden age of the Mosaic Law. They reinstituted the segregated lifestyle of the Israelites. They expelled all of the non-Israelites from Jerusalem and from the surrounding territory. They expelled all the Edomites. They expelled all the Arabs. They expelled all the Samaritans, all the Philistines, and the Sephardics. They expelled all of these people so they could practice their own religion and culture according to the law of Moses. Okay? So the Jews who stayed in Babylon and mixed with the Babylonian Sephardics, they learned this money religion. And they After Babylon was destroyed by Alexander around 331 BC, these Jews moved to Pergamos and to Jamnia. That's where they reestablished their banking religion, okay? Because the Jewish religion and banking have always gone together throughout history. So I see we only have a few minutes left. I want to establish this as a fact in Judea in the time of Christ. In the history of Israel, in the history of Palestine, the Levitical priesthood never, absolutely never, had a money-changing operation at the temple. In fact, the Levitical priesthood existed by the tithes of the people. Okay, the people would contribute grain, make offerings. Sometimes it was money, but the Levitical priesthood survived on the donations of the people. Period. There was never such a thing as a money-changing operation in front of the temple. This occurred under the Herods. Okay? And the Bible doesn't talk about it because the Apocrypha have been removed from the Bible by design. Okay? So nobody knows about this.
Just
Nobody
like the
cares.
books removed from the library, right?
That's right. Exactly. And there's another case in point. In the modern era, again, around the time of the Scofield Bible, when the Jews began to move from Russia and from Germany to America in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, they purchased many of the encyclopedia companies, all right? And when they purchased these companies, they began removing articles about the Khazars. Okay.
And they also, Rockefeller purchased the
Okay.
Britannica.
Okay. Encyclopedia Britannica. Yep.
And he started removing things that were very essential for people to know.
That's
Yes,
right.
indeed.
Everything that's damning to the Jewish mystique. Right? Okay. And they proceeded to buy up all the newspapers. Right? They proceeded to get into the textbook industry. Right? And they began to change America's culture into a Jewish culture. Okay? And so this is what they did in Palestine just before the days of Christ. Okay? And that's why Jesus said to those Pharisees, "Ye are the children of the devil. You have voided the law by your own tradition." And there was never a kind word spoken by Jesus to these scribes and Pharisees. Because why? Because they were Edomites. They were not his people. He told them, "Ye are not my sheep." Says it's right there. But Christians don't read their Bibles. All they do is get a Reader's Digest version of the New Testament. Virtually nothing is said about the Old Testament, but they get a Reader's Digest version of the New Testament by their pulpiteers in their Judeo-Christian churches, and which is a recurring theme. They have 52 weekends a year. They have their liturgy, and they never deviate from that liturgy. So there's only 52 subjects ever spoken about in Scripture, and none of it's critical of the Jews. None of it exposes Jesus Christ's tremendous antipathy toward the scribes and Pharisees, and vice versa. It's never talked about, never. But it's there on virtually every page of the four Gospels, and Paul accentuates it in many of his epistles as well. He talks about the traditions of the elders or the traditions of men. That is a direct reference to the scribes and Pharisees and their Talmudic tradition. Okay? The Talmud is criticized, it's condemned right in the New Testament. But very few people know about it because they don't make the connection between Pharisaism and Judaism. They're the same religion.
They think that the Pharisees are a group of people that no longer exist, when in
Right?
fact they do.
Yes. Yeah, the modern rabbis simply carry on the traditions of the ancient Pharisees. Their encyclopedias admit this over and over. Jewish authors admit it over and over. It's part of their culture in their in-house writings, but it's never publicly admitted to the world at large, because if it were, people would catch on to the Jewish mask.
Right.
Right? So Judaism is a religion of deception from beginning to end, from top to bottom, inside out. Everything that Jews teach is deception and lies, and the religion of Judaism is nothing but lies from beginning to end. There's not a true statement made in Judaism at all. It's all designed to fool the nations into believing that they're God's chosen people. And that's what the religion of Judaism is all about in the modern world, plus their banking operations. Okay? So when you confront the money changers in the temple in the days of Christ, now this is very interesting because I believe it's the book of Luke where it records his first public sermon after being baptized by John. He went to the temple at Capernaum, and there he read from Isaiah the prophecy that the Messiah has come. Right? He was referring to himself.
Right.
He said, "I am this person that Isaiah is talking about." And after he said that, there was a dramatic pause. Right? And then the synagogue erupted, and they grabbed hold of Jesus and tried to throw him off a cliff.
Right. Yes.
Right? Because even his own people didn't want the Messiah to come because he would upset the order of things.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Do you think the Judeo-Christians today would want Jesus to return?
I kind of have a feeling that many of them would not recognize him.
That's right. Because he'd be anti-Semitic to the core.
Yes.
The modern meaning of the term. Of course, the Jews aren't Shemites, so the vast majority of Caucasians are actually Shemites. And the
Right.
Jews are not, right? So, but this also happened in Judea because the Pharisees had so duped by the because the invasion, the subterfuge of Judea began around 125 BC. King John Hyrcanus, who was the legitimate king of Judah, made a league with the Edomites again, which is a violation of Deuteronomy 7. He gave the Edomites an ultimatum. Either you become citizens of Judea by circumcision, or we will run you through with the sword. Okay? Now, women don't get circumcised, so you
Well,
wouldn't have that choice,
I mean, I
right?
don't think it's a very good idea anyway. I think it's pretty
Right.
brutal.
But in any case, what choice would you make? Right? Given the
Yes.
choice. All right, well, the vast majority of them agreed to be circumcised rather than be killed on the spot, right? So what this did was it opened the door for the parasites to come in
Right.
with their connections to Babylon. So when Herod finally murdered Hyrcanus II, the descendant of John Hyrcanus, and had eliminated all the other Judahite, people who were qualified to rule, then he, by default, became ruler. And it was a putsch. It was an outside invasion by subterfuge. Okay? And so that's how Judea was being run ever since Herod took over. And then he assassinated the entire Sanhedrin, which was composed at that time only of pure-blooded Judahites, and began installing his Edomite cronies and friends in their place, and that voila, the scribes and Pharisees.
Wow.
Okay, that's how the Pharisees became co-opted. The Pharisees existed before then, but they were co-opted, and they were actually outed by the Edomites under Herod. So, the second thing that Jesus Christ did was he fashioned a whip with his own hands. And he went to the temple and he drove those money lenders out of the temple. You rarely hear, the televangelists never talk about that.
No, of course not.
Never talk about that. So he was driving the Edomite Babylonian moneylenders out of the temple. And Josephus records the fact that Herod had imported a priest from Babylon, Ananelus was his name, to be the high priest in Judea that year. He was not an Israelite. He was a Babylonian Canaanite.
Right.
Okay? So if you don't know these things, the Jewish interpretation of what happened in Judea in those days is this. That what was going on in Judea in those days was an in-house Judahite versus Judahite squabble. And the good Jews became Christians. All right, or this is how the dispensationalists see it. The good Jews became Christians, and the bad Jews were kicked out and killed by the Romans, right? And then the diaspora began. That's right. Not at all what happened. What happened was the Edomites took over the country and began to oppress the true Judahites, and the true Judahites began leaving, okay? And they began going elsewhere. So, and this is how the countryside of Judea began to be populated by Judahites who wanted no part of the Edomite occupation of Jerusalem, because they really didn't occupy the countryside. They simply occupied Jerusalem. But Jerusalem, again, a big city.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's always, you know, since they don't farm, they don't occupy the countryside. They only occupy the big cities. So that all of their economic activity was centered in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was at the crossroads of the trade routes from northern Africa going through Jerusalem into Asia and to India and to the north.
Mm-hmm.
Jerusalem was the New York City of the ancient world, right?
Right. Right.
And so naturally, that's where the Jews, these Edomite Jews, are going to set up shop. Okay? So the reality was that you had two completely different genomes, two completely different people. It wasn't an in-house squabble among Judahites. It was the Judahites versus the Edomites, and the Edomites took over and began pretending, well, vis-a-vis the Romans and the rest of the outside world who didn't know any better, that they were the true Judeans. And they were not. Let me read you, to conclude our discussion today, from the book of 1 John, and how he describes what happened in these days. Now, this is, again, Jesus spoke in parables, and some of the apostles spoke in parables too, but more often than not, the apostles spoke in plain speech, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But they had to be careful not to offend the Pharisees in public, because they could be killed, right? Just as you and I have to be careful not to offend the Jews today.
And that's why your website's no longer up.
That's right. That's right. Listen to what John says in 1 John, verse 18. Little children, it is the last time. And he's picturing the time between the two advents as the last time.
Mm-hmm.
As you have heard that Antichrist shall come, even now are there many Antichrists. So he's telling us very clearly that there's many Antichrists running around. Right?
Right.
The Judeo-Christian world teaches that the Antichrist is yet to come. They all teach, all these denominations teach, that the Antichrist is some future, you know, guy that's supposed to be a Jew and leads the Jews astray. Right?
No, he's been here all the time.
He's been here all along. It's exactly what he's saying.
Right.
Okay? And he continues, whereby we know that it is the last time. You know, so the conflict between the Jewish people, that is the Edomites, and the Israel people is going to be consummated in this period between the first and second advents. Jesus Christ clearly says that when he returns, he will return as the Lion of Judah, and he will cut his enemies asunder. That means he will literally cut them to pieces. There's no Jesus loves everybody in the Bible. That is totally fictitious. Verse 19. Now he's speaking of these antichrists. They went out from us, but they were not of us. For had they been of us, they would no doubt have continued with us. So let's read this again and analyze this. They went out from us. These antichrists went out from us. Jesus defined these scribes, these Jewish scribes and Pharisees, as the children of the devil. John knew this. The Jews consider the Gospel of John to be the most anti-Semitic book ever written because it's constantly describing the evils of the Jews. John 8:44 is anathema to the Jews because it describes them. It proves that the scribes and Pharisees were Edomites. Okay? And we can get into that next time. But let's continue here. They, these antichrists, went out from us, but they were not of us. They're not the same people. They're not our people. For if they had been of us, they would no doubt have continued with us. But they went out that they might be made manifest that they were not all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He's saying, okay, these Jews are not our people. These Edomites are not of us. They're not our people. But they pretend to be our people. Okay? Verse 20. But you have an unction from the Holy One, and you know all things, or we should. Unction meaning an anointing.
Mm-hmm.
I have not written to you because you know not the truth, but because you know it, and that no lie is of the truth. Who is a liar but he that denies that Jesus is the Christ? Now, which genome, which culture, group of people throughout history has very vociferously denied that Jesus is the Christ throughout history?
Yes, indeed.
But no other people. Okay?
Right.
One more phrase. He is Antichrist that denies the Father and the Son. Let me read verse 23 also. Whosoever denies the Son, the same has not the Father, but he that acknowledges the Son has the Father also. Therefore, because the Jews deny the Son, they have not the Father either. The Jews are the people of the Antichrist. That's what 1 John 2 is telling us.
Wow.
Okay?
So they're not the chosen people. Is that what you're trying to say?
You understand me. All right? But this is the knowledge that the Jews must prevent Christians from knowing at all costs, because Judaism operates on the assumption that they are God's chosen people. If people begin to doubt this lie, then their charade is exposed.
Right.
All of the mind control that they have over the Christian world will evaporate. If the Southern Baptist Convention turns against the Jews, all hell will break loose.
Right.
That voting block will be lost to them. The liberals may still vote for them, and the neocons or the Republicans will still vote for them, right? But how many? 20, 30 million?
Yeah, well, if you look at the presidential candidates, you have basically you're going to have Romney and you've got Obama. And, right. I mean, the Jews own both of those guys.
That's right. Yeah, Obama is a Jewish Muslim and Romney is a Jewish Mormon.
Right. Right.
It's syncretism, ecumenism. They simply blend their religion together and say, oh, we're tolerant.
Right. Right.
Ridiculous. It is Antichrist. It is Antichrist. And and 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 predicts that the Christian world will turn against its own religion and begin practicing abomination type of religion. And that's right. What Christianity is, you know. And I think maybe the first time you heard me say that, you were kind of shocked when I said that, right?
Well, not necessarily. I do know that the churches are infiltrated. They're corporate entities. They go along with what the government wants. They've given up their responsibility to preach what is correct and to preach moral on moral issues. I mean, they've given it away.
For filthy lucre's sake. And that's why,
Yes, indeed.
okay, all right, that's what it says, that
Yes.
these pastors will turn against the truth for filthy lucre's sake.
Yikes.
Yeah. Right? Yikes. That's what's happening, Deanna. That's what's
Yes,
happening.
indeed.
All right. Okay, so I think we got a really good start on the subject. I think we can continue with Arnold Leese a little more, next Friday.
Sure. Yeah,
Yeah?
let's look at our schedules and we'll talk
Okay.
before then. But thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you, Deanna. It's a pleasure being here. Okay, take care.
You too. Bye-bye.